Today on Locked On Vikings, we're talking about Ed Donatell's job security and perhaps appropriately a whole bunch of cornerback questions from you guys because it's Twitter Tuesday. Welcome to Locked On Vikings.
You liked it on 3-1-2-3!
You liked it!
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. The show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. Thank you so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day, each and every day. You can also find the Locked On Vikings podcast on Amazon Fire or Roku. If you have those smart TVs, you can download the Locked On Minnesota Sports app. Find this show right there, as well as everything else Locked On is doing related to Minnesota sports, all the way from the Gophers to the Timberwolves, Twins, and of course the Locked On Minnesota Sports page itself, with stuff like the Minnesota Football Party with me on it, as well as the Ron Johnson, Joe Superior Sports Talk, and all that too. It's Twitter Tuesday. That means I'm answering your questions all day long. If you have questions for me, you can always send them to me at lockedonvikingspodcast@gmail.com, or you can send them to me in the Google form, which is linked in the show notes, or just on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL or at LockedOnVikings on Twitter. Before I get started with this, I would like to plug a little giveaway that I'm doing. This isn't a Locked On thing at all. This is just me doing a giveaway for the nonprofit from which we got the rabbits, the ZD and Zoe. They show up in YouTube all the time over ad reads. They are from a nonprofit that rescues rabbits from like kill shelters and illegal trades and stuff. And they have some pretty insane vet bills, and I'm trying to help them out. And to do so, I've worked it out with them where I'm doing a jersey giveaway. If you donate some bucks to them, $1 equals one raffle ticket. And if your raffle ticket gets chosen, you get a jersey. For more details, go to the tweet linked in the show notes. But really, just do a donation. Email it, a screenshot of it to me at lockedonvikingspodcast@gmail.com. That's all you need to do to get entered. Donate as much as you feel comfortable. I would love it if you did that. Okay. All that stuff out of the way. Let's get into Twitter Tuesday. The first question comes from SportsGuy709, and I got some version of this a million times, but I like the way this is put. If the defense plays how it did against the Patriots for the rest of the season, and assuming the Vikings don't win the Super Bowl, do you think Donatell's job is at risk? The short answer to this is no. The defense is struggling, and I think it's okay to criticize Donatell and to say, hey, this was wrong. I don't think he should have done this. This was a mistake. But when we talk about calling for the guy's job, you got to understand the costs that come with that. And I don't think that it's appropriate to essentially chalk up a season of a lot of growing pains, right? A lot of guys just getting used to stuff, still thinking, new reads, new terminology, all sorts of new stuff to think about. I don't think that it's fair to look at that, or I don't think it's wise, maybe is a better word, to look at that and say that is causing a bunch of defensive stuff. Well, let's fire the guy that did that and then bring in a new guy with a new scheme and a new idea and go back to square one, where we will experience all these problems again. To me, the best way to fix the Vikings defense is with a little bit of continuity and to just let players get a little faster at it. And if you disagree, and if you say, well, more of the same, you know, the definition of insanity, blah, 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 then I would challenge you to tell me, okay, what is the existential flaw with Ed Donatell's scheme? And don't say shell coverage. Don't tell me that the safeties are too deep. No. A lot of teams are doing that, all right? The Eagles are running basically the same scheme, and their defense rocks. Whole bunch of that scheme is run by like 18 teams in this league. So don't tell me that it's a Fangio scheme and that, you know, keeping too high safeties at the beginning of the snap all the time is the problem. You got to tell me what Donatell himself is doing and tell me about, like, what is he calling the wrong coverages and situations and stuff. I don't really see that. So for me, I'm not too big on the fire a guy after 1 year thing. And I think for a lot of fandom, everything kind of looks like a nail. There's a problem, fire the guy. If the player's playing bad, bench him, get a new guy. Like, what if we just fixed the problem? And to me, the big problem is guys aren't used to it, so let them get used to it, and then let's see how the defense looks. And to me, I you need a little patience. Waka Waka asks, why weren't the Vikings able to get pressure the first three quarters? Pats had two starting O-line out and an immobile QB. The thing about that immobile QB, he got the ball out of his hands. He got the ball out of his hands remarkably fast. And that was the reason. And the reason he got, a big reason he could get the ball out of his hands was because of issues in coverage. I have a huge Patreon thing and an article coming out later this week about what the problem there is. A lot of it's Cam Bynum and some footwork issues there. A lot of it is, you know, coverage busts and stuff. I think they're just, things are just a little slow and things aren't quite spaced the way you wish they were. Yeah, I guess it's like spacing and just getting used to being like a zone landmark kind of team is just not what guys like Eric Kendricks and Harrison Smith have been used to for 8 years. And it's not what guys like Jordan Hicks and Cam Bynum and Shannon Sullivan are really excelling at either. But again, I mean, some of those guys are going to be gone after a year. Like, Shannon Sullivan's on a one-year deal, right? Unless they decide to bring him back, kind of a moot point for next year. But that's where I think the problem lies. But the coverage is letting down the pass rush in this particular case. Za'Darius Smith was absolutely crushing those dudes. He could have had 12 pressures if the coverage held up. Peter Larson asks, are the Vikings winning more despite Kirk's worst stats or because of his worst stats? Is there some correlation with Kirk's worst stats and the Vikings playing a more winning style of football? So statistically, I would really hesitate to say that like good stat or bad stats are better. Like that's probably not good analytics. But what I will say is I think the decrease in stats are a byproduct of something that is better. Of Kirk Cousins wanting to find more plays and extend more plays. And that means he might take some more sacks. He's chanced some things that have led to some interceptions because he tried to throw a pass that needed to be perfect and it wasn't. Bradley Knorr asks, how good was the Patriots pass rush in that game? Also, were the Vikings handling pressure well or did they throw more quick passes? I think the protection calls were really good. I think they did a good job getting a hat on a hat. They had a couple times with like unblocked people. But sometimes that can be part of the protection as well, where you say, hey, you know, if somebody's going to be unblocked, but we have a great hot route that counters that so we can really punish it. And so, you'll be happy with leaving a guy unblocked. But I think the line played well. Yeah, I think the protection, and it's like the pressure rate was like surprising. It was still like 30-some%, and it felt like not that much pressure. And I think a big part of it too was Kirk overcoming that pressure. Good play versus pressure is still not going to be as good as average play with no pressure. But you're not going to get no pressure. That's pie in the sky. So playing well under pressure, is in a sense a little bit more valuable because I think it just maps better onto the real world, especially when you're going up against good teams. And like the Patriots going into that game, at least were in playoff position. They are no longer in playoff position, thanks to specifically the Vikings. I have a whole bunch more questions to get to. Some of these are really fun. We'll talk a whole bunch about corners coming up in a sec, as well as, some weird ones like there always are. But let me first talk to you about Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. If you are traveling, or if you just want to try something out, or you just need something economy to get you from point A to point B, Turo can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts across the United States and also UK, Canada, and Australia. You can browse a huge selection of vehicles, SUV, something spacious that can fit the whole family, test drive an electric car, or like a classic or luxury car. If you want to show up to something in style, Turo can help you out with that as well. And many Turo hosts even deliver their car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Forget boring rental cars and find your drive at Turo.com. Thanks again for making Locked On Vikings, your first listen of the day. For your second listen, check out Locked On Sports Today. They're talking about all things in the wide world of sports. You can find that also wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Get a little bit of World Cup action and whatever else is going on in sports. Maybe some Timberwolves news you guys are perhaps paying attention to. So let's move on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag. Next one comes from Squeaks. We're talking a lot about corners in these next few. And that question is, has P2 truly had a Pro Bowl worthy season so far? Yes. With a bullet, I think. Not only has he generated a lot of interceptions, but those interceptions were very skillful. There's a lot of veteran stuff. When you look at why those interceptions happened, you know, interception totals can get inflated if a quarterback just throws a crappy pass and you happen to be there, right? Or tip drills or whatever. That's not how Patrick Peterson's getting his interceptions. He's earning them by knowing what's coming. He's playing like a vet. I think he's a big part of the locker room. I think he's been a big part of the development of a guy like a Caleb Evans or Cameron Dantzler. His impact on the Vikings has been a big deal. The thing is, I mean, the Pro Bowl is a popularity contest. At the end of the day, I mean, there's fan voting, but even the coaches and players and contributions are still pretty much popularity contests. Newsflash, when you're in the middle of a season and you're a head coach or a player, you're not exactly paying a ton of attention to what's going on around the NFL. So you have to sort of ascend into the national consciousness to get on the radar of players. And I do think Patrick Peterson has done that. I like his chances to actually make the Pro Bowl. I certainly think he deserves it, and I like his chances to actually do it. Malcolm Biggles says, is Duke Shelley really a serviceable backup cornerback? I hesitate to go that far. No, I don't think he's athletic enough to be. His athletic profile is pretty bad, and I think the big Devontae Parker catch you saw, pretty good technique. He turned it right. He didn't do anything really wrong. He just didn't have the explosion to keep up, and I don't think you can really trust that guy on the field unless you're in an emergency situation, which the Vikings were in. They were down to their fourth option, so you start putting up with that thing once you're down to your fourth option. But if he were the second option, hence backup, I would probably not be very satisfied with that. Corey Olhauser says, what should we do at the cornerback position? I know you say we can't change our personnel, but we're depleted at the position. Yeah, sure. So I talk about that, like, you're not going to get a new slot corner to replace Chandon Sullivan, right? You're not going to get a new right guard to replace Ed Ingram, right? Whoever's on your roster is who's on your roster. The Vikings are currently, if a Caleb Evans does not play against the Jets, which I'll talk about in a second, because we do have some updates on that. You wouldn't have Andrew Booth. He just had knee surgery. You wouldn't have Cameron Dantzler. He's still on IR for at least 1 week necessarily, and they hope to get him back the week after. So you would be down to Duke Shelley again. If Duke Shelley had to play another game, I don't think that would be such an emergency. You have to start looking at the waiver wire. I'll tell you that much. I mean, you're down to your fourth option, right? And I don't know if waiver wire guy coming in and, you know, not practicing till Thursday is going to improve on this situation. And I don't think that this situation is very long term, because Caleb Evans practiced with a limited red contact, no contact jersey. Now, if you remember from the Christian Darrisaw thing, that implies that he's nearing the end of the concussion protocol. He's in step three or four of five, or phase three or four of five. And if he didn't come off after a half hour, which I believe the beat reporters would have said that, they didn't say that. They only spotted him, and the media can only see for a little bit. So we kind of don't really know. But if a Caleb Evans didn't come off after just 30 minutes, if he practiced for more than 30 minutes, then that means phase four. Phase three, you can practice no contact for a maximum of 30 minutes. So Caleb Evans is close to coming back. Now, all concussions are different, and all concussions progress in different ways, so we got to wait to see how the whole week bears out. But they did have a light kind of walkthroughy thing on Monday, a light practice, and Caleb Evans did participate in that, and that's a very good sign. So I like Caleb Evans' chances to be ready to play for this game. But if he gets hurt again, or if he can't go or whatever, and it happens to be Duke Shelley, some questions don't have answers, man. There's no way you can set up where you can just like withstand three injuries at the same position. Nobody's got that. And eventually you're going to find a Duke Shelley on a roster if you dig deep enough. That said, if you want to go start looking at people's practice squads for people you prefer to Duke Shelley, I guess be my guest. Justin Raish asks, what's the offense going to look like if, big if, Irv can be healthy in the playoffs? Yeah, so Kevin O'Connell has insisted that that Irv Smith is still a part of the Vikings' offensive plans, that they have a plan for TJ Hockenson and Irv Smith on the field. It's just that you'd see a lot more 12 personnel. You might see 11 personnel plays run out of 12 personnel. So you might see like a 3-by-1 bunch with two tight ends in it as a way to maybe coax more linebackers in there. And then if you got a linebacker in the bunch and you know that their bunch coverage rules, you might be able to exploit that to get Justin Jefferson on a linebacker. That's the kind of stuff that gets really, really exciting. Plus, you can make, plus you can run out of that. Plus, you just have a little bit more rotation. I'm also trying to keep an eye on Ben Ellefson. I don't know if he's going to come off IR or not. Right now, Nick Muse is on the active roster. So that, I do think that it can kind of help unlock a new dimension, help get better matchups for Jefferson and Hockenson and all of those guys. But of course, big if, you know, he ever gets healthy. I have a bunch more questions that I want to get to, so let's keep this baby rolling. But first things first, I want to tell you about another podcast that I'm actually super excited about. It's called Block Forever. It's at Audible. And this episode of Locked On Vikings is also brought to you by Audible. Audible is releasing a slate of new football podcasts, and I'm sure you're going to love them. Block Forever is one of them, and it's hosted by former NFL All-Pro Ryan Khalil, brother of Matt, you may remember him. And Ryan Khalil takes the conversation about football to the next level, talking to former players, coaches, and really giving you a more kind of gritty inside view of what it's like in the locker room. Stuff like Christian McCaffrey talking about his love-hate relationship with fantasy football, Juju Smith-Schuster giving honest opinions on other players and positions in the league. And especially with the former players, you know, once you're not beholden to an NFL team's PR department, you can let your hair down a little bit and talk about the nitty-gritty details. That's when you get some of the best storytelling. So I'm very excited to check that out. You can check that out right now. Available everywhere. Anywhere you get your favorite podcast, it is, again, a Block Forever. You can get the full series wherever you find this show. Audible, get in the game. Moving on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag. Hey, if you want some more in-depth stuff, how about find me on Patreon, patreon.com/LukeBraunNFL. You can find a very in-depth Kirk Cousins review that has posted, will have posted by the time you guys are listening to this, as well as some stuff on Cam Bynum coming up later, some stuff on how the Vikings used mesh in particular in key situations, and hopefully expand your understanding of what exactly the Vikings are going through and what's going well, what isn't, all that stuff. Moving on, let's go to a question from Scooter, who says, why doesn't O'Connell incorporate Wongu into our offense? A special package with just a few plays could really take advantage of his unique skill set. So there could be a bunch of answers to this, but I think a lot of it is tells. So the Vikings are kind of hard to predict because they do everything out of the same personnel. The main, like, principal five players, they're 11 personnel with Jefferson, Thielen, KJ Osborne, and now Hockenson, Dalvin Cook. That five players, they have everything in their playbook. Some version of it runs out of 11 personnel. So when those five guys are in the huddle, the defense could see anything in the entire playbook. And that's really potent when you get to, like, faking things, misdirecting things. And it can really open up a lot of good situations. When you start working rotational guys in there, I get the same question with Rager, right? Rager, Wongu, you know, more Johnny Munt. Why doesn't Nick Muse get in there? CJ Hammond stuff. It starts to narrow down the amount of plays that can be. And then it becomes harder to get away with deception. This is the logic that got McVay to the Super Bowl in 2018, and I think the Vikings are actually, their offense looks a lot like that 2018 McVay offense with a few tweaks to prevent the Bill Belichicking of 2018, put up 33 on him. So, yeah, that would be why. If you want Wongu to be involved, he needs to be able to also work the staple plays, the bread and butters. He needs to be able to just do zone and duo. And just run those, because if he's just a package player, then the defense is going to figure that out pretty quick and say, ah, Wongu's in. This is one of their package plays. It's not going to work as well. Andy Spillum says, is there anything we can do to match up with the Eagles' D-line. Linval, Sue, Cox, that rookie, I assume you mean Jordan Davis, are we just boned? Somebody asked a very similar question about the Jets and like Quinnen Williams and everybody. So I think the answer is really similar to what they did against New England. You need to be really smart about your protections. If you do have Blake Brandel, Christian Darrisaw did not practice on the short Monday practice. He's still in the concussion protocol, so you still have Blake Brandel. They gave him so much help, so much chipping with CJ Ham or tight ends or somebody over there. They had to run a lot more out of 21 and 12 personnel, so they had that extra chipper. That's going to be what you have to do again to just help those matchups. But then a lot of it too is just making sure that you call protections that don't leave your most vulnerable players in one-on-one situations, or at least limit that, right? They're going to get Blake Brandel one-on-one sometimes. Those guys get paid too, right? They're going to have some game plans that work, but you just got to try to limit and mitigate. Joe says, other than Jefferson, who is the next Viking you hope to see get a long-term extension? So I guess we got to look at the 2020 draft class for this, right? Because those are the guys who are all going to be up for extension, headed into contract years next year. So that's Cam Dantzler. I definitely want to keep Cam Dantzler in house. I think he is very close to being a very, very good corner, and a little bit more development, he'll absolutely be worth it. I already think he's been playing pretty well, and I think he's like one or two steps forward away from being like a true blue starting corner. Plus, we just got to keep these corners around because Patrick Peterson retires any minute now, and they're going to be pretty depleted for the long term, especially if Andrew Booth can't get healthy. If you can't get Lewis Seen to stay healthy, that was a pretty rough injury. Like, those things also kind of hurt you. Helps to have a Caleb Evans, though, as a depth piece. Who else from the 2020 class? I guess Cleveland. Somebody asked, James K. asked, is Cleveland playing at a level worthy of a contract extension? I would say a modest one, but I wouldn't break the bank over it. But he has taken like a step forward a little bit every time. Like, it's enough. I don't think he's playing at a Pro Bowl level or anything, but I do think he's having a very solid season. So yeah, but you're not giving him, you know, the Joe Tooney contract. But yeah, I would give him like a couple years at reasonable guard pay. So I guess Cleveland and Dantzler would be next on the list. And then you go to the 2021 guys the year after that. That's when we're starting to talk about Darrisaw and Wongu and so on. Daniel Hampshire says, week one versus the Packers, I was expecting Jefferson to do that every week. Then versus the Eagles, he did the exact opposite. We've seen some big plays from JJ since then, but Kevin O'Connell isn't scheming him like in week one anymore. Was that just unique circumstances, or do you think something else? Buddy, week one was like the third best game of Justin Jefferson. I mean, so every game is going to be different because every defense is going to approach the Vikings differently, and finding how to counter that and to get Justin Jefferson the one-on-ones or the zone opportunities that he needs is going to be a different challenge every week. There is not an answer you can just spam and just get that guy open every time, right? Because if you call something a whole bunch, the next team is going to come prepared for that. And so you have to constantly be kind of like one-upping each other. And it's just a difficult thing. You're not going to win that battle every time. However, I will say he's had four games under 100 yards this year. We're in week 13. He's had four games under 100 yards that were not 100 yard games. One of them was a 98. Week 13. Brad Nelson says, has your opinion of the Vikings draft day trade with the Packers changed now that Christian Watson is blowing up? No. It's a process thing, and the opportunities that the Vikings acquired were insane. The value that the Vikings acquired in terms of draft pick opportunities were insane. Now, if the Vikings picked the wrong dude with those picks, that's a separate decision to me, and it has nothing to do with the trade, because they could have picked someone better. Packers certainly didn't know who we were going to pick when they gave us 2 second-round picks for 1 second-round pick. They just traded up to get their guy a lot, and they just paid more than they probably had to. They just got out negotiated. If you buy a great loaf of bread that should cost $10 because it's real good, and you pay $30 for it, that loaf of bread being real good doesn't make you the overpay any less of an overpay. Nathan Hulse asks, and by the way, don't overreact to Christian Watson. Right now, half of his receptions are touchdowns. That's not sustainable. Let me see him sustain some things. Let me see him really beat some guys on routes and be a little bit more than an after catch merchant. Nathan Holtz asks, Is Kendricks washed? All season, I've been assuming there was some nuance to his bad PFF scores, but on Thursday, he had some truly abysmal reps. He's struggling. Yeah. He's one of the guys I'm always talking about when I say, yeah, you know, the Vikings, they're learning, even the veterans, blah, blah, blah. Kendricks is making mistakes. He's slow to get out there sometimes because he's still thinking. So is Daniel Hunter. So is Harrison Smith. They're all still thinking. Washed? No, I don't see problems in athleticism. I see a guy that's just not playing as instinctively as he did last year in the system he's been in for 8 years. Who'd have thunk it? PW Minneapolis says, what has to happen for Justin Jefferson to get in the MVP conversation? So, he has to play quarterback. I'm sorry. I just don't see a world in this modern era where quarterbacks doesn't win MVP, where it's something else. If we really want to talk about it, 2K. I think if he gets to 2K, then we can maybe, that's so historic that it will be so in the consciousness of like sports writers that maybe we can talk about him like getting a vote, maybe, but probably not still. He's got to play quarterback. Riley Osborne Hudson asks a two-parter. First part is, would the Vikings defense this year make the Broncos offense look good? No, I think they're broken beyond repair, and I don't think it has anything to do with quality of defense. They've done bad against bad defenses too. And the second part is, what is your opinion on the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis? So for those who are unaware, the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis is an alternate theory to one of the like prehistoric mass extinctions. There's been many mass extinctions throughout the history of our Big Blue Marble. And the Younger Dryas one is widely believed to be caused by climate change related events, prehistoric climate stuff. The climate got warm enough where there was a very big ice cap melt, and that led to a very big influx of cold Arctic water entering the ocean, disrupting ocean currents, and basically creating insane weather events everywhere. That is the widely accepted theory for why a whole bunch of the megafauna, the big like dinosaur-esque things, died in the northern hemisphere and created the ice age. I think there's a more fancy scientific name, but that's like the cause of the ice age. And the ice age didn't really happen in the southern hemisphere the same way it did in the northern hemisphere. The impact hypothesis that Riley Osborne Hudson brought up is basically an alternate theory that says, nope, it was meteors. I don't think I buy it. It really relies on like meteors hitting in specific places at specific times to really perfectly like explain everything. And there's some holes in the logic when you really look into like the science of it, and there should be evidence where there isn't. It feels a little bit like a really, really reachy thing that you could believe in if you squinted really hard enough and you really wanted some evidence that climate change isn't a problem. So I don't really buy it. A little bit of an Occam's razor thing. The ocean currents have a lot of impact on the weather because they affect the salinity of the water, the density of the water, and therefore how much the water is interacting with like the air and air pressure and weather systems and all that stuff. So a major change in the water temperature, like we know how much that affects weather. Google hurricanes and how they work. I'm going to go with the mainstream on this. Strawweat asks, how was your Thanksgiving? It was great, man. Thanks for asking. Love to overeat and then take a nap in the car and then wake up just in time to watch the Vikings kick off and win a game. Can't complain, man. That's going to be it for Twitter Tuesday. Tomorrow, I'm going to get into some deeper stuff. We might even talk a little bit about safety technique. I want to talk about safeties a lot. I don't know. It's just what I'm feeling right now, but we'll see. We'll see about it tomorrow. I'll get into something deep, and then we're on to Jets mode. Check out Locked On Sports today. Check me out on Locked On or on patreon.com/LukeBrownNFL. Donate to the Bunny charity, and maybe you can win a Vikings jersey. All the info in the description, as I said. I'll see y'all tomorrow. And as always, Skull.